Call the Tax Committee to order for March 12th, 2015. And members will wait a little bit to do the minutes. We need one more member for a quorum, but I think we'll start. Senator Weber, welcome to the Tax Committee. Senate File 712.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. Pleased to bring you this morning Senate File 712. I think first item of business is that there is an author's amendment. This being the first committee this has been in, and there are a couple of basically wording changes that need to be made. It is known as the A2 amendment, I believe, is in your packets.
And Senator Weber, would you present the bill as if the A2 was adopted, and when we have a quorum, we'll put it on for you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File number 712 deals basically with three communities in my district, they being Woodstock, Dundee, and Jeffers, and for various reasons had some issues that arose in terms of sometimes equipment, special projects, difficulty in connections with their local auditor, and as a result failed to meet the deadlines as far as their audit reports are concerned. The result of that is that there has been a penalty, the withholding of some of their LGA, and in some of our instances, this LGA constitutes basically about 30. The total LGA constitutes about 30% of their state budget, or their local budget, I should say. Today, Woodstock could not have someone here, and and in their particular situation. As in the case of most of our small cities, the clerk positions are held by part-time people, and their resources that they have are limited. I think Woodstock's total budget is $113,000 for a city of roughly 119 people. They had some equipment malfunctions. They had a lot of times the city clerk, who works 12-hour shifts in another job away from Woodstock, sometimes when she's doing after hours trying to catch up on things, she needs to go online to get to her, communicate with her auditor for the next day or what have you. And in our area, sometimes internet services is sporadic, and it is a weighty experience because you wait and you wait and you wait. And so as a result, they had a variety of things that happened that created this delay. And I think the cities that I have with me here today, in terms of Dundee and Jeffers, have had similar experiences and similar events. And I do wish to also state that I appreciate, I know that representatives from the League of Minnesota Cities and the Office of the State Auditor have been working with these districts to try and get things caught up and brought up to date, and I appreciate the efforts that both offices have made in that regard. At this point in time, I have the mayors of Dundee and Jeffers here, and they will briefly outline the situation that arose for them.
Thank you, Senator Weber, and appreciating the importance of the audits so that we can keep track and make sure that things are going as they are supposed to. We also are sympathetic if there are extenuating circumstances. If the testifiers could and know if this is the only time or that this has occurred in their communities, if they could let us know, that might be helpful. And before we go to the testifiers, we have a quorum, so let's adopt the A2 amendment. Senator Coonan moves the A2 amendment. Any discussion, members? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevailed. The bill in the order that you want, Senator Weber?
Yes, it is. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mayor Prinz?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Brad Prinz, Mayor Jeffers. In regard to your question, yes, this happened to us a couple years ago. Two or three years ago, I think it was. We had the same problem, and it was basically because of we had just hired a new clerk, and during her first year, the CTAS program came into effect, and she was having quite a bit of problem getting a hold of that program. And so it was late that year also. And for 2013, our auditor, we didn't get the stuff to the auditor probably until June after the first deadline. I had questioned the city clerk several times, June, July, August, and she had told me everything was at the auditor's office. And about the middle of September, the auditor called me and says, I don't think you're going to make the deadline. So we were quite surprised by that. After the first time, we thought it would never happen again, and here we are again. It was a little out of our control, but we thought everything was being done, and we were quite surprised when he says, no, we're not going to make it. So okay. And I'd like to add, we already have our 2014 audit done.
Very good. So, very good.
Anything that's else all there? I have. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you for traveling to the Capitol today. Mayor, Mayor Paplo?
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the tax committee.
What we got is basically the same problems he's got. We've had a computer system, our old one, for probably 7 years, and that crashed on us. And we got it fixed. Well, another 2 months later, it crashed again. So this last January 1st, we purchased a new computer system to be hopefully to be compatible with the system that the auditor has. We're hoping that everything is going to work between us. We were having problems before, her sending stuff to us and us sending stuff to her. It wouldn't process. But like I said, we're short of the funds. We're putting in a sewer project right now. We're almost finishing with that. We got funds to complete that system, but there's going to be additional stuff on that end. We need the funds to help us carry through. That's all I have to say. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mayor. And if you could state your name for the record, it helps us identify when we're listening to the tape. If you could just state your name, please.
I'm Wayne E. Paplo. I'm mayor of the city of Dundee, Minnesota.
Thank you.
We're a community of about 86 people.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
And Mr. Chair, I would just add, basically, the total amount of LGA in this that's being discussed in this bill is $101,570. You will note that there is actually no fiscal cost because we are dealing within the same biennium here. So this money has already been appropriated through the normal LGA channels, and we're getting this in time to deal with that. So,
thank you, Senator. Questions, members? Anyone else wish to testify on Senate File 712? I see the state auditor is here this morning, so she's listening as you present your case. Seeing nothing else, we will certainly take this into consideration as we're putting our bill together. Thank you, Senator Weber. Thank you, mayors, for coming to St. Paul. Chair will lay over Senate File 712 for possible inclusion.
Mr.
As
Chair.
Amended. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you.
Members, let's do the minutes before we move on. It's in your packet, the minutes of March 10th. You've had a chance to review them. I would entertain a motion for approval.
So moved.
Senator Eaton moves approval of the March 10th, 2015 minutes. Any corrections, comments? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Thank you. Senator Coonan. Senator Coonan, local government aid.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Thanks for hearing this bill, Senate File 874. As you know, local government aid is an important program for cities across the state, and that includes both rural and metro area cities. The purpose of the program is to help those cities with less property tax wealth pay for services and infrastructure which our businesses and residents rely on. In 2002, the LGA program accounted for 4% of the state's general fund budget. In 2015, it's 2.5%. And LGA remains 9% below its 2002 level. Senate File 874 increases the LGA appropriation by $45.5 million above current law by 2017. The bill is structured so that the increase is phased in over two calendar years. The end goal of this bill is to finally get the LGA program back to its 2002 funding level. And I have a couple of testifiers with me today, Mr. Chairman. I have Mr. Peterson from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities and Mayor Lund from the City of Fridley.
And Senator Coonan, if we're going back to 2002 level and we're 9% below that, is this a 9% increase? Did my math right there? Mr.
Yes.
Peterson, introduce yourself and we can start on the testimony and maybe if you can answer that question.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bradley Peterson. I'm an attorney and lobbyist with the firm of Flaherty and Hood here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. And so, yes, Mr. Chair, that's the idea is that it would be, you know, about a, you know, over the 2 years, so you're doing half in calendar year 16 and half in calendar year 17. And so, Mr. Chair and members, first, thanks to Senator Coonan for authoring this bill, and I'd also like to thank our co-authors, Senator Eakin, Senator Senjum, Senator Dedzic, and Senator Dames. We've got a good bipartisan group that's regionally diverse. The Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities represents 85 communities outside of the metro area, all of whom receive at least some local government aid. And, you know, I think over the years, you know, our belief is that, you know, Minnesota is strong, and one of the things that makes Minnesota, Minnesota is the fact that we've got communities across the state of every size and shape that are thriving and that are doing well, certainly compared to rural areas in other states. And I think that in large part, much of that is due to the local government aid program that's been in place since the 1970s. You know, a few items, the reform of the formula and appropriation increase in 2013 was extremely positive, and it helped communities across the state stabilize city budgets and allow for reinvestment in such things as infrastructure, purchase of capital equipment, roads, the provision of long overdue wage and benefit increases to employees, the hiring back of public safety employees across the state. Many communities bought fire trucks, and it really has allowed communities to stabilize after the Great Recession. Nonetheless, as Senator Coonan said, we're still below the 2002 level, and in fact, I was just informed this morning that if you look at LGA per capita on an inflation-adjusted basis, we are still, if you use the implicit price deflator, still below per capita where we were in 1972, the first year of the program. Even though we have made great strides in the last couple of years, there's still a little ways to go. And CGMC continues to be committed to the reforms in 2013. I think as you'll hear from Mayor Lund, you know, it was positive for communities across the state, not only our rural communities, but ones in the metro area as well. And so with that, Mr. Chair, we really appreciate the time and attention of the committee, and we'll be happy to answer questions after Mayor Lund.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, you mentioned the 2013 reforms. I think Senator Reinert carried that, and you know, we saw significant bumps in local government aid, and then we also changed the percentage so more went towards metro than had in the past. But I'm trying to understand why then we're going, or what do you mean by going back to 2002 levels? I mean, we did have a significant increase 2 years ago, and so I'm, you know, many of my communities get local government aid. I'm not speaking against it. I just want to make sure I understand exactly what you're saying.
Sure.
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazalka, when we talk about the 2002 level, we're talking about the actual appropriation that's in law. And so from community to community, it will vary in terms of where they're at, because we have a different formula than we did at that time, and obviously communities' tax bases and circumstances has changed. So when we talk about 2002, it's the actual dollar appropriation that went into the program generally. To your comment about the 2013 reform, it is true that for new money, and it was true in 2013, new money that's going into the program is split roughly 50-50 between metro and rural. However, if you look at the overall distribution of the program, it's still about 65% rural and 35% metro.
Senator Gazelka, I think your question was, what was the state appropriation in 2002?
Yeah.
And I don't know, but I'm speculating it was around $564 million. And after this biennium, if this was to become law, it would be $564 million.
That's what I was asking.
I think that's what you were asking.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mayor Lund.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Scott Lund, and I am in my 15th year as the mayor of Fridley. I'm proud to be so. I'm here also today representing Metro Cities and the League of Minnesota Cities, and I'd like to thank Senator Coonan for authoring Senate File 874, and I'm here to testify in support of this important bill to restore local government aid funding to the 2002 level of $565 million. Since 2002, LGA appropriation has fluctuated, but these changes have mostly been downward, reaching a low point in 2012 when the state distributed only $425 million to cities, a reduction of nearly 25% from the 2002 levels. Should also be noted that in Fridley, our low point was actually in 2008, where in the early 2000s, about 2003 or 4, there was an anticipation of $2.1 million in local government aid to our city. Our low point in 2008 greatly exceeded that nearly 25% reduction, where we received zero LGA. We have come back up from that. It is much less than what we used to get, and I will tell you in a moment why I feel it is so important, especially for in Fridley's case. The 2013 legislature restored $80 million in funding and updated the formula to reflect more current measures of city needs, including the needs of fully developed suburban cities like Fridley. We applauded the 2013 changes authored by Senator Reinert, and Senator Coonan's bill will complete the restoration of the LGA program. LGA is the only general purpose aid to cities, and a well-funding program serves communities and the state by ensuring all cities can provide basic public services to their residents. Many of us may think of LGA as a program that largely benefits small cities in greater Minnesota or the central core cities, but LGA is also very important for my city. For Fridley, LGA helps fund essential city services, including, not the least of which, our squad cars. We were in a mode of replacing squad cars that are used 24/7. We have three officers assigned to squad cars, so they virtually are never shut off. We were in a mode of replacing squad cars in a rotation every 4 years. We now have that increased to 6 years. We additionally bond now where we never used to bond. In the last 8 years, we have been bonding every other year to replace, to substitute for the loss of government aids, because we no longer feel that, many cities no longer feel that we can rely on local government aid. It has fluctuated too greatly. So many have taken it out of their budgets. In Fridley's case, we are a charter city. Being a charter city, a charter restriction was placed on our community the same day that I was elected. So in 2001, we no longer can raise property taxes or any form of taxation or fees greater than the CPI. Last year alone, the CPI was 1.54%. So we don't have the ability to raise our property taxes. We no longer can stand on our own because of that restriction. If we don't have local government aid as a sustainable outside funding mechanism, we are on a slippery slope. We cannot continue to bond forever, which only puts us in a worse position over time, where we're not only repaying them, those loans, but we're paying the interest on top of it, of course. So we would like to see a sustainable, fundable source, and we already have that in place, in my mind anyways. funding for local government aid came from the advent of sales tax. Now, certainly sales tax has fluctuated with our economy, but it never went down to zero like our local government aid did at one time. It is extremely important for us to stop bonding in the near future, as it will take us many years to get back, even with the advent of more LGA. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mayor Lund. Questions, members? And Mayor, I too agree that the purpose of LGA has become more and more equitable services across the state. There has been ongoing conversations about property tax relief and et cetera, what our expectations are, but I think that it at this point is primarily so that every community can have some expectation of equitable services, and I think that was what your testimony indicated.
Thank you,
Anyone
Senator.
Else, members? Anyone else who wish to testify on Senate File 874? And Mr. Peterson, you know, we did the formula redo, and part of the recommendation that the cities carried forward was an inflationary adjustment that didn't survive the process. Have you done an analysis of what the increase would have been if that would have survived the process?
Not for this year. I think that when we had estimated it last year, when we had those discussions, it was between $10 and $11 million a year, okay. I think is my recollection. But I can look at that for you.
Yeah, that would be good information to as we contemplate the request here. Anything else, members? Nobody else. Thank you, Senator Coonan. Anything else? Any last closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just my closing comment would be that I live in Chippewa County, which is fairly close to South Dakota, so I end up in South Dakota a fair amount of time. And that's a state that doesn't have a mechanism like LGA. And if you drive around South Dakota and some of the smaller communities, you can really tell the difference between a small community in South Dakota and a small community here in Minnesota. So LGA does have a role for helping communities that don't have the property wealth for services and infrastructure. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Chair will lay Senate File 874 over for possible inclusion. And Senator Bach is on the committee. I see Senator Eakin is here. Do you mind, Senator Bach, if I take him first? Senator Eakin. Welcome, Senator Eakin, County Program Aid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, for the opportunity to testify on Senate File 1640 today. As members of this committee are acutely aware, local government aid is a critical lifeline for local units of government to provide important services and tax relief to constituents. This is especially true for counties who deal with a vast number of state mandates, many of which are not even funded, and have limited means to raise revenue. Far too often, the state has been inconsistent in the aid that it has allotted to the counties. In fact, county program aid has only recently made it back to its original level of funding from 2005. If you take into account inflation, it still hasn't caught up. The bill in front of you today represents, in my opinion, a realistic and fair investment into an often neglected local resource. The bill also represents an important policy discussion on the implications of the instability and the volatility and also local budgeting of county program aid. Here to testify in support of this bill and provide some background and some local examples include, first of all, Eric Willett from the Department of Revenue, who is going to give some background information.
Thank you, Senator.
And there's also an amendment that is also needed to be added here.
We'll get the amendment passed out, and maybe Mr. Willett and Mr. Hilgard will come forward while we're getting the amendment passed out. And this is an author's amendment, first stop.
And this is the first stop, so to get it in the shape and form that I would like.
Senator Senjum, move A1 amendment. Any discussion, members? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The A1 is adopted. Mr. Ouellette, do you want to start first?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am Eric Ouellette with the Department of Revenue, and I was asked to provide a very brief historical look at the program and some of the issues that are going on with the county program aid. Before 2004, counties received four separate aid programs that were in 2003 merged into the county program aid program. So since the 2005 distribution, the new program has been one funding stream, although it has several components to it. As you can see on the chart, the appropriation of county program aid has fluctuated over time. The green bar shows what was certified to be paid to counties. The yellow line underneath that shows what was actually paid after unallotments or legislatively enacted cuts. So there has been some volatility and unpredictability in the distribution of county program aid in the overall appropriation. The current appropriation is about where it was at the beginning of the program. It's $206 million, whereas it was about $200 million in 2004. These are actual dollar amounts, and if you account for inflation, then the appropriation is a lot lower than it was.
Mr. Ouellette, I can't read. How far back into history does that graph go?
I'm sorry. 1996 is when that starts, and in before the white vertical line, that is the old attached machinery aid, home hack. County Criminal Justice Aid and Family Preservation Aid programs, the combination of those programs. The big cut happened in 2004, a one-time cut, and then the county program aid took over in 2005.
Thank you, Mr. Ouellette.
Mm-hmm. The formula has three main components. There's a need aid component that actually has three variables to it. 40% of the aid is based on the elderly population in the county. 40% is based on the share of food stamp recipients in the county, and 20% is based on Part 1 crimes in the county. Those three components add up to a county's share of the total need aid, which is a little over $100 million. Tax-based equalization aid is based on population and adjusted net tax capacity, in other words, the tax base of the county. Most of my comments will be on the tax-based equalization aid. Currently, 25 counties receive no tax-based equalization aid. There's also a transition aid that was created to help counties that lost significant aid due to the creation of the county program aid compared to the four previous programs, and there's seven counties that receive that transition aid. This shows the change in aid per capita between 2005 and 2015. The darker blue, and I'm sorry, I don't have the legend on here, but the darker blue are the counties that receive more per capita, and the lighter and white receive less. And what you can see comparing these two is that the areas of the state that have a lot of farmland are the ones that were darker in 2005 and are lighter today. This shows the change in tax-based equalization aid from 2005 to 2015, and as you can see, those red counties are the ones that have been particularly impacted by the shift in tax base. About 28 counties are in that have lost 75 to 100% of their tax-based equalization aid, not their total aid, but their tax-based equalization aid. And because it's a fixed pot, when one county loses tax-based equalization aid, that shifts to other counties. This is the actual tax-based equalization aid formula, and I'm not going to walk through this for you, but I did want to point out a couple of important observations about how the formula works. One is that it compares... The qualifying threshold for whether you get tax-based equalization aid or not is a static dollar amount. It's a fixed dollars per capita. So that means that as tax bases expand, counties will cross that threshold and no longer receive tax base equalization aid, and only those counties that remain below that threshold will receive the tax base equalization aid. And that's what we've seen in the last 10 years, is that as some of the counties, primarily the ag counties, have crossed that dollar threshold, that tax base equalization aid pool has been focused on a smaller share of counties. Theoretically, if we left this completely alone, because tax bases generally grow over time, at some point no county would qualify for tax base equalization aid. And the year before that, perhaps one county would qualify for tax base equalization aid and receive the entire $105 million.
And so, Mr. Ouellette, to that point, what Senator Eakin is proposing is an adjustment to this part of the county program aid. And could it be construed as an effort to bring it into to make an inflationary adjustment for the last 10 years? I mean, is that kind of what I'm hearing you say?
Mr. Chair and members, yes, conceptually what this bill is doing is updating that static figure and also giving it an adjustment over time, as I understand it may be amended to do. Whether it's the right amount or not, we haven't analyzed it in that way, but it is updating it so that it takes into account that tax bases have grown over the past 10 years since this program was created.
Okay. Thank you.
To highlight sort of the reason why so many counties no longer receive county program aid, the average ANTC per capita for all counties is $1,160 per capita. The counties that still receive tax base equalization aid, their average tax base is $1,067 per capita. And the 25 counties that no longer receive tax base equalization aid, their average tax base per capita is $2,951 per capita. So what you're seeing is a tremendous growth in tax base in the rural counties that don't have a lot of population, but they have a lot of farmland. So that tax base per capita has really grown in those counties. And the formula is basically doing exactly what it was designed to do, which is recognizing that some counties that have more tax base maybe are less needy of the tax base equalization aid than the other counties.
Can I ask a question at this point, Mr. Ouellette? So that's the tax-based equalization component. I don't know if you're intending on talking any more about the need-based component, but, you know, those counties still have all those roads and all of those service costs irrespective of their population and value. Does the need could you go back and revisit the need-based component again, just so I could see if I thought it might be addressing some of those, or
yep. Mr. Chair and members, this is an abbreviated version of a longer presentation. In the interest of time, I took some out, but the need aid has been more stable over time, and virtually all counties get need aid because all counties have senior population, food stamp recipients, and Part 1 crimes. So that part of the program, which is half the appropriation, has been more stable, and counties do receive that. Where the big reductions have come is on the tax-based equalization aid side. The couple places where there is some volatility in the need aid, the food stamps program went through some pretty dramatic change between 2006 and 2011 and some dramatic growth. So that shifted the need aid a little bit among counties, although that seems to have stabilized since 2011. And the Part 1 crimes can be volatile for some of the smaller counties. We think there may be some reporting issues, so we're counting on Matt and the association to make sure that the smaller counties report their Part 1 crimes to make sure that they do receive the need aid that they should be getting.
Thank you, Mr. Ouellette.
Finally, one other feature of the aid programs that I wanted to touch on is what's sometimes called grandfathers. Both the county program aid and the local government aid program have utilized grandfathers for different purposes to moderate volatility or to achieve distributional goals outside of the main formula. Sometimes there's jurisdiction-specific grandfathers when a particular city or county has a particular issue that isn't addressed in the formula. There's also been categorical grandfathers like the transition aid in the county program aid formula, where a particular subset of counties or cities are deemed to need more aid for a reason that is not captured by the formula. So that's another feature that these main general purpose aid programs have used over time. There's something like that in the county aid proposal in terms of a similar thing to what the city aid program has limits on how much aid can change from one year to the next. The county program has not had that historically, but I believe this proposal will introduce that feature to the county program aid. So just in quick summary, it's farmland value growth that has caused county program aid to shift in the last 10 years. There's 25 counties that no longer receive tax-based equalization aid. Since its inception, the county program appropriation is about the same as it was in actual dollars, so it has not been adjusted for inflation. Volatility has come mostly from tax-based changes, law changes, and that food stamp change that I mentioned, the law changes being the cuts that have occurred over the last 10 years and the restoration of some of those cuts.
So, thank you, Mr. Ouellette.
Just a quick highlight of how we got to where we're at today.
Thank you, Mr. Ouellette. Questions for Mr. Ouellette?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Hilger, could you, in your testimony, walk us through a little bit about the changes you're proposing to the tax-based equalization, but also address the inflationary adjustment that's being proposed in this bill? We've kind of shied away from that, and I'd like to have a little discussion about that with you today.
Mr. Chair and members, if you don't mind, I would also ask that Keith Carlson, Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association, would join me as well to discuss some of those technicalities. I'll provide just a brief historical overview of AMC's support behind this bill, if you don't mind. We have we also have a couple counties today with us that traveled far to also
Mr. Hilger, could you identify your name for the record, please?
Sorry about that. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Matt Hilgart. I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. Thank you to Senator Eakin for your authorship of Senate File 1640. The Association of Minnesota Counties strongly supports this bill. And as I mentioned, I'll try to keep my testimony brief and to our kind of history behind this particular proposal. Throughout the past decade, county program aid funding has been inconsistent, resulting in counties not being able to depend on their aid as valuable budgeting resources. In addition, as Mr. Ouellette outlined during his presentation, with recent spikes in agricultural prices, a large amount of counties have seen major decreases in a portion of their aid. Whether Pipestone County, Marshall, Renville, or Lake, over 40 counties from every region of the state have lost CPA within the past few years, some losing over 80% of their aid from 2005 levels. In fact, there are 25 counties that failed to receive a portion of their aid altogether. With no action by the legislature, this number will only get greater with time. As an association that represents all Minnesota's 87 counties, AMC dedicates itself each year to visiting each of our 10 districts on multiple occasions. During these times, we are able to meet with commissioners, administrators, and county staff to discuss priorities and issues. This past year, during our legislative platform process, AMC was made intimately aware of the volatility counties are facing in the realms of CPA funding. In fact, when asking each district to rank priority issues, county program aid sustainability came in second overall, next to transportation. In October of 2014, the Association of Minnesota Counties Board of Directors moved to approve a CPA working group to assess the concerning trends and evaluate possible formula changes. The group met on several occasions and came up with three recommendations. The first was, in order to reduce volatility, we would place a cap on losses from any given year. And it is my understanding, as Mr. Ouellette pointed out, that LGA has a similar component. The second one was to address the 25 counties that do not receive a major component of their aid, the tax-based equalization aid, which has not been revised since its inception. And Mr. Carlson can probably speak to this a little later. And finally, our working group members made it very clear that they want to continue working with legislators, commissioners, administrators post-session to review the CPA formula. In an age where counties are forced to do more with less, providing equitable, quality services while maintaining low property tax burdens, CPA remains an important tool in providing counties with the resources to fund transportation, human services, and public safety programs of statewide importance. Without counties providing many of these services, the state would have to provide them as they do in most other states. And with that, I'd leave it up to Mr. Carlson if he wanted to kind of go over a brief overview of the technical components of the bill.
Welcome, Mr. Carlson. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of 10 of the regional center counties in greater Minnesota and 4 of the ring counties here in the metro area. And I also want to thank Senator Eakin for introducing this bill. It's a long overdue change in the county programming formula to address the issues that Mr. Willett identified, and also starts providing some additional assistance to close the large gap that exists between the general purposes aid provided to counties versus that provided to cities. Right now, counties are really the largest piece of the property taxes. Right now, we receive roughly the equivalent of 7.7% of our levy has county program aid, whereas cities whose overall levy is over $700 million less than ours receives aid equivalent to over 26% of their levy. So the additional appropriation in this bill of $25 million goes some way towards assisting in reducing our contribution to the property tax burden and somewhat closing the gap that exists currently between the funding we receive versus what the cities receive. I've included a handout that I've distributed to the, and it just identifies in specific terms who were affected by the volatility of this, the current formula. 49 of the 87 counties received cuts between 2014 and 2015. All of those are greater Minnesota counties. As has been previously mentioned, 25 of those counties receive no aid from essentially half of the money that goes out under what's called the tax base equalization formula. With regards to the bill itself, then, the changes on lines 1.13, changing the per capita amount from $185 to $330, and the local effort to from 9.45% to 12% is meant to bring several of these counties back on the formula. It's impossible, given the current funding level, to bring every county back onto the tax base equalization side of the formula. Currently, if you have tax base of over $1,985 per capita, you're off the formula. We have situations right now, such as Traverse County, where they have more than $5,000 of tax base per capita, yet I think many of you would identify it as a relatively poor county, and that's certainly true on an income basis. The change down in lines 1.19, 1.2, we've always had an issue with this formula on how smaller counties are treated. And with the changes, we had to make special allowance for those counties between 12,500 and 16,500 population. And then the language down on lines 1.23, 1.24 are the provisions that are intended to reintroduce somewhat of a concept of a grandfather that no county can receive less in any 1 year than 95% of what they received in the prior year. That addresses much of the drops that occurred between 2015 and 2014.
And so, Mr. Carlson, sure. to that point, so over time, they would gradually be reduced to where the level would be. It's just that it would, instead of being a one-time deal, it would be more gradual because of the 95. Am I understanding that right?
Mr. Chairman, members, that's correct. I think it's hoped that there'll be some reduction in ag values as we go out further into the future and that more counties will come on the formula. But in the meantime, this is the device to get them back.
Okay, thank you.
Restore some of their aid. Finally, just mention the appropriations has provided down on lines 2.28 through the remainder of that page is a $25 million increase. The language up on 2.15 through 2.2 is an inflation adjustment for this formula, again, to address, you know, the substantial disparity that exists between counties and cities in how much aid and how much assistance goes relative to our levy. I'll just mention then the amendment, I'm not sure that it's been acted on yet, would index the $330 per capita. That's part of the basic tax base equalization formula on 1.13 to provide that the amount of tax base you have and still qualify will grow as the statewide values grow. With that, Mr. Chairman, members, I'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
And Mr. Carlson, I don't know if your memory is good enough or not, but, you know, we did that one-time supplemental last year of 213. So, I mean, what this tells me is this has been going on for at least 2 years. And do you recall, I don't, how many counties were impacted by the supplemental aid?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, 11 counties were impacted last year. It was exactly the same phenomena that they saw large valuation increases and consequently saw significant reductions in the tax base equalization aid. The legislature gave them a one-time restoration of those dollars, but made no provision going out into the future, and so this is making more of a permanent change to address that volatility.
Thank you. Questions, members?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the interaction, why, like Traverse County, the example you gave, would have a relatively high per person, per capita tax capacity, and yet be in greater need of aid? What's going on there? And I think you mentioned that there are other counties as well that might be in that position.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, basically it's the run-up in agricultural values. Traverse County does have a lot of farms values and has, I think many people know here, is relatively sparsely populated. So on a per capita basis, with the run-up in ag values, they look very rich for purposes of this formula. But the reality, if you look at the incomes, the economy of that, with the exception of maybe the farm sector, is it's a relatively poor county. Yet because of one half of this formula is distributed solely based on population and tax base, they saw a relatively dramatic reduction. And again, we couldn't reach up high enough to really bring them back on the formula. It's the language down in lines 123, 124 that really provides some additional aid for them.
So, just
Senator
to follow
Nelson.
Up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, but the increased tax capacity per capita would lead to more taxes payable to the county. But you're saying that because they're sparsely populated counties, that increased tax capacity doesn't actually meet the needs of the county?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, it doesn't necessarily result in more tax revenue for the county. That's a decision that the county board has to make on its whether or not it wants to levy more taxes. The phenomena we're seeing throughout the heavily ag portions of the state right now is that farmers are paying extraordinarily high taxes relative to what they've done historically. That has had the result of somewhat moderating the taxes on homeowners and other properties at the county level, but you don't necessarily see that same phenomena at the school district or the city level. The city's not really enjoying the increase in tax base because they don't have many farms located in them, and the schools because of the complicated nature of the school funding that doesn't place as much effort or doesn't have as much impact on valuation because of the much higher level of state funding.
And Senator Nelson, let me let you continue your questioning. I just want to draw your attention to Senate File 921 that's coming up, and we will have further discussion about ag values and taxes when we do that bill. But Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll look forward to that. And so I understand the the quandary and the problem with the high ag land valuations and what that is and the impact on farmers and also the impact on the school districts and the cities. But and so those increased ag lands don't exactly translate into increased school tax, school revenues or city revenues. I understand that. But this bill is about county revenues. And what I'm trying to understand is why those increased tax capacity, per capita tax capacity, doesn't translate into more revenues for the county.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, again, what revenues any local government, be it the county, the city, or the school district, to the extent that they rely on local property taxes, is totally dependent on what the county board, the school board, or the city council elects to levy. The county boards certainly could have elected to levy and grab what some may characterize as a windfall in tax base, but that would just drive the taxes further higher on farmers who are already suffering a very large increase, and no county board, to my knowledge, is willing to do that, to take advantage of that extraordinary run-up in values that's already increasing the taxes on farmers substantially. Farmers, based on the simulations that have been done by your staff, House Research, and the counties, went up by double digits. They're the only entity that suffered that level of increase. And you know, I think to give credit to county boards, they didn't want to take further advantage of that phenomena.
Thank you.
Anything else, members? Thank you, Mr. Carlson, Mr. Hilger. There's a couple other testifiers, Ms. Hansen and Mr. Burkett. Welcome, Ms. Hansen.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for your time this morning and consideration of Senate File 1640. My name is Sharon Hansen, County Administrator from Pipestone County, and I've been with Pipestone County since 2005. I'm also happy to let you know that Pipestone County Board Chairman is with us also, Bruce Koyman. He joins us here today to show his support for this testimony. Pipestone County supports Senate File 1640 because we believe it'll provide long-term stabilization of county program aid distribution, and specific to Pipestone County, the ability to directly reduce county property taxes. Since 2005, Pipestone County has lost the most program aid out of all 87 counties, $966,240 to be exact, or an 85% reduction of program aid. This has meant at one time our program aid was 26% of our aid plus levy. Now that amount of county program aid in comparison to levy is around 3%. In order to withstand this large reduction in revenue, Pipestone County has reduced, consolidated, and held back on projects and services, allowing us to keep the average levy increases to just around 5% since 1998. However, if program aid was even half of what it was in 2005, we would have had a levy decrease in 2015, and our average levy increase would be far, far less. Pipestone County strictly uses program aid for levy reduction, meaning we don't set aside program aid for future expenses, nor do we push the revenue to other funds or other projects. We use program aid revenue to reduce the bottom line, our county levy. Our levy history has shown that when program aid has been stable or increased, it has resulted in levy decreases. Pipestone County supports the intention of county program aid, that an increase in tax capacity means a greater ability to pay. Pipestone County's increase in tax capacity is a result of increased land values. From 2006 to 2011, Pipestone County saw an increase in land sales of 134%, not due to new developments or new property. This has resulted in tax capacity increase that has doubled in the last 10 years. Senate File 1640 keeps the premise regarding tax capacity and the ability to pay intact. In fact, for Pipestone County, it may mean more years with limited county program aid and a longer climb back to higher program aid levels. But we support this legislation regardless, based on our views of the goals of program aid. First, levy reduction. Second, county program aid funding that is stable. And third, that no matter where you live or where you travel, Minnesota residents should expect to generally receive same or equal services. Mr. Chairman and committee members, thank you for your time today and your thoughtful consideration and support of Senate File 1640. I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. And if you'll stay there, we'll have Mr. Burkett's testimony and then questions. Mr. Burkett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of committee for having me. I'm Nathan Burkett. I'm the Aiken County Administrator, and I'm also here representing the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus, which is 29 rural counties throughout the state of Minnesota. Counties in general are seeking a reasonable amount of funding for county program aid as well as stability and consistency. Rural counties in particular are seeking for those counties who experienced a significant CPA decrease in recent years to be brought back to reasonable levels, as Ms. Hansen just spoke to. There are many rural counties in the state of Minnesota that have taken a disproportionate hit in county program aid over the course of the past decade or so. County program aid is a part of our funding mix that we rely on to deliver services and to hold down property taxes. When county program aid decreases or doesn't keep up with the cost of doing business, counties are faced with a dilemma, with none of the options on the table being particularly desirable. Each year, Minnesota county boards sit down to begin the process of building our budgets. Most rural counties are continually approaching this process in the context of increasing demand for services, such as human services and transportation, while our population is aging and our productive tax base is eroding or simply maintaining. All counties are experiencing increases in the demand for the services that we provide. In addition to being assigned new programs and program modifications by state agencies that provide us oversight, many rural counties, and Aiken County in particular, are aging at a rate faster than the state average. Aging populations require an increased and different set of services than populations which are continually replenishing through births or new arrivals. However, aging populations cannot support increases in property taxes because many of those people are struggling to stay in their homes as it is. Counties can help both by providing services to keep people in their homes safely and by striving to keep our property taxes at a reasonable level. The benefit to the state to providing additional CPA is apparent. Helping folks stay in their homes is exponentially more cost-effective than nursing homes. Counties are also feeling the same pressure that legislators are feeling related to transportation. Our local road systems are rapidly approaching the point at which the traditional mill and overlay will not be sufficient to maintain the road. After a period of time without proper maintenance, roads require a reconstruction, which is significantly more expensive than resurfacing. Local roads are not just used for the benefit of local residents. The state relies on goods which are produced in rural areas for a significant portion of the state's economy. Counties in the northern part of the state provide significant recreational opportunities for the rest of the state. It's what Minnesota is known for. In Aiken County, with a normal population of about 16,000, we estimate that on an average weekend in the summer, we have a population of nearly 50,000 people. That's a lot of people from throughout the state that come to enjoy what Aiken County has to offer. Our local road systems are quickly deteriorating, and we use county program aid to help maintain and keep those road systems safe. The compounding effect and the difficulty of our decision is that our tax bases are generally not experiencing growth because of new construction. While our tax capacities are starting to come back because of recession lows and because of increase in agriculture values, It's not due to new construction or increased economic activity. This means that when the county's property tax levy must be increased, it falls upon the same property taxpayers, not on new property taxpayers. While increasing the amounts of county program aid, providing for greater stability, will not necessarily decrease the difficulty of the decisions of county boards, it will help us deliver essential services to our shared constituents. County boards in rural Minnesota are notoriously remiss to increase their levies. When a levy in rural Minnesota is increased, you can be certain it's justified. County program aid helps counties to hold their levies at reasonable levels and to keep delivering services to our citizens. Your actions to increase and stabilize county program aid will have a direct impact on county levies. And that's not to say that no county will increase their levy. But the state would have a direct role in keeping property tax levels reasonable and therefore helping to keep people in their homes, keeping children and vulnerable adults safe, keeping our communities safe, ensuring products from rural areas can make it efficiently to market, ensuring people can travel freely throughout rural Minnesota for business or pleasure, and that our communities can experience service delivery excellence that they deserve. Minnesota counties, rural Minnesota counties in particular, and Aiken County, support Senate File 1640 because if it passes, you'll be helping to keep levies at a reasonable rate, establishing consistency for our future planning efforts so that we may continue to deliver exceptional services to our communities. Thank you.
Mr. Burkett or Ms. Hansen, do either one of you, because you brought up the transportation levy, either one of you know off the top of your head what your percentage of your levy is for transportation and what the trend line is in your counties? Ms. Hansen?
Mr. Chair and committee members, our transportation levy, the county levy portion, is about 18% in comparison to our total levy. And that's remained relatively stable. However, recently we've had non-county state aid highway roads that have needed improvements, and so we've needed to use county levy funds as a source of revenue for those road improvements, and that's impacted our levy budget pressures as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and committee members, on a roughly $12 million levy plus aid that the county has, we spend about $3 million, so 25% on roads. But what I would say to that is that's primarily maintenance. There isn't enough money in that to do new construction or to do resurfacing. And so our five-year road plan suggests that we should have about $1.7 million per year going into resurfacing projects primarily. We have about $600,000 going into it because we just can't justify or find additional funds to do so.
Thank you. Questions, members? Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do either for both of the testifiers, do you know, did your need-based aid, how much did that fluctuate in the same years you were talking about where this declined, the equalization rate declined?
Senator Dietzick, I'd also remind the members that we did put $40 million into county program aid last year, split between the two, so that would also be playing a role in what the counties were receiving. But either one of you familiar with your need-based component changes?
Mr. Chair and committee members and Senator, I have it here in front of me. It might take me a little time to dig for it, and I haven't specifically looked at that for Pipestone County, but we can certainly get that answer back to you. I do want to add just maybe from an earlier discussion, if I could, Mr. Chair.
Could you speak up just a bit more?
Okay,
thank you.
Sorry about that. Just an indication of program aid and the budget levy pressures we experience. Because for 2015, we experienced close to a $300,000 reduction, if we were to make that all up with levy, it would have been a 6% increase alone for the county levy increase. And so I just wanted to get back to that a little bit to show you the impact of reductions in revenue and impact on the levy, but we can certainly get that to you.
Thank you. Anything else, members? Anyone else in the audience wish to testify on Senate File 1640?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Sanjum.
Mr. Chair, thank you. In the due course, I think it would be interesting if we could, say, have a hypothetical run on on what we have now versus how this formula change affects the numbers.
Sure. Very good. Yes, we'll get that to us. Anything else, members? Seeing Senator Coonan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Hansen, you gave some number, or thank you for being here, by the way. You gave some numbers of land increases, value increases in Pipestone County. Said, how much was that and over what period of time was that again?
Ms. Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Senator Coonan, our land values increased 134%, and the time frame that I used was from, bear with me here a moment, from 2006 to 2011, and we've seen some slight moderation in land values in the last couple years, but it's been a slight moderation.
Senator Coonan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And three of the four counties I represent are on this list of 25 counties that get no tax base equalization along with Pipestone. And in my area, too, I think we've seen land values go down some. I know it takes a couple years for that to work through the property tax system and actually show up on tax statements. But I was wondering if you had I know this is a question you may not be able to answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. If you had some idea how much land prices may have gone down.
Ms. Hansen.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I don't have an exact figure. Certainly we could get you some information, but when I say slight moderation, maybe $1,000 an acre less. We did, however, recently have a land sale for $12,000 an acre, which still puts it at a higher level, and as you're well aware in your representative counties, and high level per acre. So I would say it's still quite a high level of land sales, even though we've seen slight moderation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Anything else, members? Senator Eakin.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And just an example, I think from my own home county of Norman, which you know well, Senator and Mr. Chair, used to be our senator before the redistricting. But Norman County in 05 received $855,000 of county program aid. Now they're receiving $128,000. So a significant drop. Property taxes went up by 12% from 2014, and they still had to tap into reserves even after that increase. And I think it's important to note that one of the reasons that we've seen this has already been testified to is the fact that ag land values have been increasing substantially, and that was due to a farm economy that was performing very well, but now the farm economy is taking a downturn, but the ag land values are still high. It takes time before the downturn in the ag economy is reflected in the assessments of the land values. So our communities are really getting caught right now in this situation where the ag economy is turning downward, but the ag land values are still high. So I appreciate the opportunity to present this and for the discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair, a question to Senator Eaton or frankly anyone. So as we put additional county program aid into the tax bill in 2013, that additional aid seemingly then by virtue of the formula trended towards counties with perhaps less ag land and away from those with more. Is that generally true?
Senator Senjum, I mean, we could refer to staff, but I would say yes, that's generally true, and it's because of the increases in land values. This is an equalization component of the aid, and so as their values were going up, they wouldn't have qualified for that.
Right.
Clearly, the ones that fell off the formula weren't getting anything.
Right.
So they wouldn't have gotten any of that.
Yeah. Which, Mr. Chair, is a number of counties. I was just looking at a run.
Well, and it's getting worse. It was 11 counties in 2013 that we dealt with, and now it's 25.
Yeah. Thank you.
Anything else, members? Thank you, Senator Eakin. Chair will lay Senate File 1640 over for possible inclusion. Thank you for joining us. Senator Bach, and maybe Mr. Solomon and Mr. Carlson will join Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Senator Bach.
Pleasure to be sitting on this side of the table. Let me start, Mr. Chairman, by thanking you and thanking the committee for restoring township aid in this biennium that we're in. Townships used to receive state aid, LGA, like cities do. And I believe it was in the 2001 tax reform bill, the very large reform we did during the Ventura administration, where it was canceled out and they lost it. And if I remember correctly, at the time they were receiving about $29 million of township aid from the state. And so I appreciate this committee's effort to, in this biennium, to put $10 million back in and restore that program. I have kind of an interesting story related to it. Generally, before the session starts and after the session concludes, my Coochin County commissioners asked me to come and see them and talk to them about the session. And for those of you that aren't certain where Coochin County is, that's the town that International Falls resides in. And that's the county seat. So after the session, I go up to Coochin County and I sit down with the commissioners, and I'm feeling pretty good about restoring township aid. And the commissioner said to me, "But we're not going to get any." And I said, "Well, how in the world can that be? A big rural county like this, you got to have all kinds of townships." What I learned is they don't have any organized townships. All of their townships are considered unorganized and don't have local units of government. So I raised the issue with Senator Skoy, and we started looking into it and found out we've got, I think, 17 counties in the state that have unorganized territories like that, where the county actually is the local government unit. And a couple of counties actually have none. Coochin County is one of them that has no organized townships at all. And I think our intent when we went to restore township aid was to help in townships whether they have an organized unit of government or not. And I just think of my own personal situation. When I leave the city of Cook to drive out to my home on the lake, it's about 12 miles. 6 miles of it is in an unorganized township. And the road is labeled UT, and it has a number. And the UT stands for unorganized township. And the county bears the cost of that. Organized townships, no, they're actually going to get some state aid for that. And in the case of these unorganized ones, they won't. So, Mr. Chairman, what the bill does is makes the unorganized townships in the counties eligible to receive aid also. It's not a big cost. It's about $270,000. But I do think it's a matter of fairness. And Mr. Chairman, I do have an A1 amendment that was requested by the state auditor. Under current law, cities under 2,500 have different reporting requirements. So this would put towns in the same place that cities are relative to reporting requirements, accounting and other reporting standards that are required by the state auditor. So this is requested by their office. And it also changes the appropriation for the county aid, or the township aid program. There apparently was some technical problems with the calculation, but anyway, this changes it from $260,000 of additional money to $270,000, which is actually the number that's needed. That's the extent of the A1 amendment. I'd like to move that, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bach moves the A1 amendment. Any conversation? Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The A1 is adopted. Thank you, Senator Bach. Any discussion, members?
I have a question.
Senator Eaton.
If the township is unorganized, I assume there's no form of government there. Then does the county manage the township funds from this?
And Senator Eaton, maybe I'll answer that. When I was a county commissioner, Clearwater has, I don't know, 6 or 8 unorganized townships. And what the county board does is you adjourn, well, we did. We adjourned our county board meeting. We reconvened as the township board, made the changes for the roads and the culverts and the grading and the snow plowing and whatever had to do, then adjourned as the town board and reconvened as the county board. That's what we did. And I don't know if that's universal, but that's the form of government that those unorganized townships had. And I don't know if you caught this from Senator Bach, but what the glitch was, the way that the population is counted wasn't clear because the census is done different in an unorganized township than an organized township. And so they, because of the way you count the people, they didn't qualify for the Township Aid Program. So that's the change that's going on here. So Senator Eaton.
So, Mr. Chair, then the county would be responsible for the reporting that's in this amendment? Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Senator Nelson.
Just a brief, excuse me, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief question. How many unorganized townships do you think there are in Minnesota?
15. Mr. Sulem, perhaps.
Senator, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Sulem, General Counsel and Director of Governmental Relations for the Minnesota Association of Townships. I don't have a number. The thing that I wanted to point out with this is that the term unorganized township is really kind of the colloquialism. The legal term is unorganized territory for the very reason that Senator Scoia mentioned. There is no unit of government. There is no elected body. And therefore, what you have is in the counties, and they're mainly the far northern counties, between the organized towns, they actually have a town board, and the town board does the local work, or a city. Everything in between is that unorganized territory that remains with the county. And so different counties or different areas, some give them names, others it's just land that's part of the county. There is no name carried over. And so I don't have that number, but that's what we're dealing with, is that those areas that fall outside of the boundaries of a true town or a city and therefore remains at the county. And I just wanted to make a quick statement on the amendment. That actually applies to the organized towns. When we put the aid formula back in, the state auditor called us because she had received a call from revenue saying, can you certify the township's compliance with the audits? And we discovered that there wasn't that process the way that we had, where the aid formula made it in the 2013 tax bill. It was outside of the requirements for that audit sign-off, and we agree with the state auditor that we should be subject to that regulation, and we have been training our members to expect that, and hopefully we won't be back here with bills like Senator Weber had to do to bring them back into compliance, but we definitely want to make sure our folks are following the proper protocol.
And Senator Nelson's staff pointed out to me that there's 15 counties that have unorganized townships in the state.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson. Oh,
just a comment. It's rather concerning to hear that there are citizens who don't have elected representatives. I think that's what I'm hearing in these unorganized townships. They don't have any – they're not able to elect the people that are making those decisions for them.
Well, Mr. Chairman, they vote for their county commissioners, right, and that actually is their local form of government is through the county.
Right. Thank you.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, it's their decision not to have the local government. Right. And the list of the 15 counties on the back of the revenue thing. But I had a question on, it says Clearwater and Marshall would not receive aid because they don't have agricultural property within their unorganized territories.
Yep.
I didn't understand it. Why is that the township aid does not have, requires ag?
Senator Marty, maybe Mr. Sylvia will do a better job, but basically the formula is a ratio of population and ag land. And so we did have some conversation about converting that to other types of land, but I don't think we were able to accomplish that. Mr. Sylvia, do you want to help my explanation?
Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, that's correct. Part of the formula has to do with the ratio of ag property within the location. So if there's no ag property, then technically they wouldn't qualify under the formula.
Thanks. And Senator Marty, I know that there would be some forest roads, et cetera, in those areas, but very sparsely populated. Where there is ag land and some population, then they would be picked up in the formula.
Thanks.
Anything else? Senator Coonan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And actually, Mr. Chairman, I have this question. This is for you. When you were on the county board and you adjourned and then came to order to take care of unorganized township business, was that all of the unorganized territory, or were there different subdivisions of unorganized territory?
Senator Coonan, we would deal with them in difference because they did have boundaries, And we had a lake in the unorganized townships that had a watershed issue where it was overflowing, overflowing the roads around there. So we actually met quite often dealing with those road issues in that one unorganized township.
Thank you, Chairman. Kind of on that, not meaning to get too far out in the weeds, but kind of to Senator Coonan's comment. Years ago when I was in the other body, I actually changed the law at the request of Cook County. The law previously had been they could only use the property taxes generated in the unorganized township in the unorganized township. And we actually and there was never enough money generated in the township to maybe make improvements to the road or do some ditching. So we actually changed the law that allowed counties with unorganized townships to be able to pool all the money from the unorganized townships so they actually could do real projects rather than not have enough money to do any because it was spread all over. So, and that was at the request of Cook County that year, and I believe that was a statewide change.
Mr. Carlson, anything to add?
Mr. Chairman, again, Keith Carlson, Minnesota Intercounty Association. Two of my members, Crow Wing County and St. Louis County, do have unorganized territories and would be beneficiaries under this bill. I want to thank Senator Bach for introducing it. It is an issue.
Senator Senger. Helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps Mr. Sulem or anyone else. In a situation, you know, normally a township does their levy, they get some township aid now, and they take care of their business. In this, where the unorganized township is not levying, is the county then levying some portion of money, whatever it might be, to take care of the needs beyond the what will be the township aid if we pass this bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, the statutes do provide that a county could do a special levy just on the unorganized territory residents for road purposes. But that would be the discretion of the county board if they wish to extend that extra levy above and beyond the general county levy. There is no at the unorganized level, they're not paying a town tax or a city tax because there is no entity to put that in place. So the tax would be whatever the county opts, both between the general levy and that authority to do a special levy for roads and bridges within the unorganized territory.
But again, that's county. Maybe my real question is, if this measure is adopted, will there be peace in the valley amongst those townships that do levy? If you get what I mean.
Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, I would hope so. Again, because there's no governing entity, there's no membership either, sure. So we don't really have a good way of reaching out directly to the unorganized territory unless they contact us about trying to become organized, which has happened. We've had a couple of new entities form.
Thank you.
Anything else, members? Anyone else wish to testify on the Senate? Oh, there is an A2 amendment.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Bach,
disappointed to see the Star Tribune left the room because the A2 amendment is more substantial. You know, there's been a lot of talk, Mr. Chairman, about you've got a surplus, send the money back. And my concern has always been the structural stability of our state. And the important thing about accounting gimmicks is that we have them at our disposal when the state suffers from revenue shortfalls. And there are a lot of them. There's a lot of different accounting gimmicks that have been used. The most high profile, of course, is the school aid shift that was used just recently. But the A2 amendment, Mr. Chairman, and why don't I move it to get it in front of the committee? I'll move
Senator Bach moves the A2 amendment. Senator Bach.
The A2 amendment, members, restores an old payment schedule that was previously in place but was changed in order to shift some state aid payments into another biennium. There are 10 different state aid payments that are made, and the two biggest are local government aid and county program aid. There are 8 other smaller ones where the state pays out aid to local governments. Previously, those were paid out in four equal installments in March, September, March, September, November, and
July.
July. Oh, okay, okay. In July. We didn't make a change. Okay. In four equal payments. What happened when money got tight at some point in the past is they decided if we could get rid of the March payment, we could shift all the payments into July. So they started to make the payments in July and December, and you were able to shift cost from a current biennium into the next one forward, much like is done with the June accelerated sales tax. We claw June revenue in June, sales tax revenue, rather than have it remitted in July how it normally would be remitted. So, members, this undoes that shift that was done of making the payments in two installments in July and December, and restores the previous law where the payments are made in four equal installments to the local government units. Because of it, there's an accounting shift in it because some of the payments from July are now paid in March. But, Mr. Chairman, it's a one-time shift, and it does cost over $200 million. But I think it's important at a time of a surplus to restore these kind of accounting shifts so that some future legislature, when we have a bad economic downturn, has these kind of mechanisms available to them to be able to keep the state's budget in balance. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to take questions.
And Senator Bach, I appreciate your willingness to consider this on this bill. As you mentioned, this is one of the shifts that is out there. There's a number of them. I think it has to be part of our conversation this year. The high-profile school shift has been paid back. But as you mentioned, 2 days ago, we heard the June accelerated shift in committee. That's $200 million. Here's another $200 and some million dollars in shifts that we need to be considering as we go through this session. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, I think this is a wise thing to do, is, again, as you said, because it's a shift back, it's a huge cost. I was just curious, when you look at the months when they're paid out, July and November, most of them, it's not quarterly. I mean, it's January, February, March, April, May, June would be the next one, and I can understand. Was that an earlier date? Was that shifted to July? And then the one by getting rid of the other two, you shifted all of the first half of the year to next biennium? Was that two shifts?
Senator Martin, let me remind you, it's a large cost, but it's one-time money.
I agree. Mr. Chair, I think this is wise to do. I think it's good policy.
Senator Bach.
The intent was to just get away from paying in March in a current biennium and push it out to the next one, the same thing that June Accelerated does. And I think it would be a very good accounting mechanism for a future legislature to have at their disposal.
Senator Sanjan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bach, in your testimony, you said four equal installments. And I don't see anything in this amendment that suggests they be equal, but maybe you can help me. If you really mean equal,
Chairman,
I believe
that's how it's paid out now in two equal installments. I might say that somewhere else in law, not on this page, but it's paid out now in two equal installments in July and December. And I'm just assuming somewhere else in law it says that the aid payment is divided equally in multiple installments. But, you know, Mr. Carlson probably wrote this statute, so he probably could help us.
Mr. Carlson.
Chairman, members, as a matter of fact, I was on staff at the time that this was done back in 1980 or 81. The statute has always assumed that they're in equal installments. There's no place, to my knowledge, where it actually says it has to be equal, but that in practice is what's done.
Well, Mr. Chair, I won't make it, but if truly it's supposed to be equal, you could assume that or certainly establish that by adding equal in line 1.6. I mean,
I'm certainly fine with that, but why don't we check, have counsel do a little research and see, and if,
sure.
I mean, if that's how it's always been done, I certainly don't object to doing that. But
my point, Mr. Chair, is just if it's not clear, why you can establish, you know, it doesn't say anywhere, you can continue to make the shift just based on different amounts at different
and Senator
installments.
As we contemplate the final version of the bill,
right.
If this is able to be part of it, we certainly will consider that. Senator Hartman? Senator Hartman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bach, why do we want to go back to a practice from the 1960s and 70s when our local governments have already adjusted to this change and have been working under the current practice for 30 years?
Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Hartman, it's an accounting mechanism that would be very important for a future legislature to have when we have revenue shortfalls so that we can keep the state's budget in balance without having to make cuts all around the state budget. Accounting, you know, I call them accounting measures, but you could call them gimmicks, but they're important. They're very important to have at your disposal when you have, like we do, a constitutional requirement to keep a balanced budget. And local units of government would probably be fine if we didn't make this change, but the legislature should support this change so that future legislatures have this kind of mechanism at their disposal. And I realize it costs money, and it might be a lot sexier to send $350 per person back to people, but the structural stability of the state budget is this committee's responsibility, and making available to future legislatures these kind of mechanisms, I think, is the right policy.
And Senator Bach, it would continue the effort that we started last year where we were started paying back on the June accelerated. We're going to try to do some continuation of that, and this would be a continuation of that effort. Senator Hartman.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think the June accelerated is very different. It was a far more recent change, and we have an awful lot of private sector businesses relying on that June accelerated. It has been harsh for our economy, but we have decades of practice here. And what you're telling us is the justification for doing it is twofold. One, so that we don't just send back checks. I don't think that's the only alternative to return $350 per person. I think there are way better alternatives. And secondly, your other justification is just so we can undo it again. And I think the stability and the predictability of these LGA payments is really important. And I think if we're just going to do it just so we can unwind it yet again, I think that's a really poor practice.
Well, Mr. Senator Chairman, Bach. I just want to make it available to future legislatures so that they can keep the state's budget in balance. That's all. And this, Senator Hartman, the June accelerated was done about the same time as this, I believe, back in the 80-81 recession. I believe these were both done about the same time. June accelerated actually goes that far back.
Senator Marty.
And Mr. Chair, I would love to have us fix these things just because it's the way it ought to be done, but Senator Hartman, I think we should be doing a reserve, a rainy day fund for doing it rather than these kind of shifts. But I think we should undo these shifts. They are expensive. I was just curious, Mr. Carlson, was the original four dates, were they in June or July? I was curious if that was an earlier shift, moving it from June to July, because that would be a similar kind of thing that when we switched, got rid of the March one, would be the same sort of thing.
Mr. Carlson. Chairman, Senator Marty, I don't have absolute recall. I believe July had always been the date, but I could be mistaken.
And Senator Marty, let me remind you that we did put a mechanism in place last year to build the rainy day fund.
Mr. Chair, I very much appreciate that. I think that's the wise policy that gets no credit or anything, but it's what we should be doing. The other point I'd make on the installment thing, I agree with Senator Senjum, they should be roughly equal, but I think we have so many places in law where we have installment payments, including on taxes and so on, and I would guess most of them are property taxes. I don't know that uses the word equal installments, but that's always the practice. When you put the word equal in one place, just make sure we're not screwing up everything else where we don't use the word, because I think your concern is appropriate, but I think it's working this way because I think that's the understanding that installments mean roughly equivalent.
Senator Dietzick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to go back to the original bill, and it's just kind of a clarification, maybe, or a
Senator Dietzick, could we adopt the A2
yes.
amendment?
Mm-hmm.
Any more discussion on the A2? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. No. Motion prevailed. The A2 is adopted. Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When it lists the counties with unorganized territories, I believe Hennepin County has some unorganized territories. I don't know if they would qualify under this, but Fort Snelling and the airport are unorganized territory, possibly in Hennepin County. So could we check on that?
We certainly can, Senator.
Well, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Bach. I just checked with Mr. Carlson, and it's true. Hennepin County has two, and they don't qualify for the aid because they don't have agricultural property.
Much like
Senator Scoy's county that he lives in.
I kind of figured that, but I wanted them listed if possible to just correct.
Senator Marty?
Mr. Chair, nor do they have population in them either, I'm guessing.
No.
Anyone else wish to testify on Senate File 944? Senator Bach, any closing comments?
So, Mr. Chairman, nothing more.
Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of Senate, or we're going to lay Senate File 944 as amended over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Roger.
I totally could.
Here you go.
Welcome, Senator Scoy. Do you want to start with 921 or 947? Senator Scoy, Senate File 921.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And let me get to my proper papers here.
And I'm told you have an amendment, Senator Scoy.
Senate File.
And I'm sorry, we also have 1057. If that's
Let's start with the first one on the 1057.
Senator Scoy, 1057.
And Mr. Chair, if we could adopt the amendment that I have, then I would talk about the bill.
Senator Scoy, we're handing out the amendment, the A2 members.
I would move that.
Senator Scoy moves the A2 amendment. Members, a chance to take a look at it. All right, members, on the A2 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The A2 amendment is adopted. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And with the adoption of the A2 amendment, what this bill does is do a payment in lieu of taxes increase of approximately 3%. This is kind of our AIDS Day, and we are going to be looking at increases of some level in LGA and county program aid and township aid. So we're also contemplating payment in lieu as part of that increase. Originally, I had just put a 3% increase across all categories. In conversations with the counties that have preponderance of these public lands, they had requested that I kind of take that same dollar amount and apply it into the lowest payment area, which is the county-administered other natural resources land, which is currently at a dollar and a half. After the amendment, the increase there would be about $2, which would be about a $3 million increase. This amendment has just got on, so we're going to get the revenue estimate of that in time. And being that I don't have a copy of the A2 amendment, I also believe there is a change on the A2 amendment with regard to discussion.
Senator, we've got a copy coming for you.
Thank you very much. Yes, and online 111 through 116, there is a change with regard to the ConCon lands. These are lands that are owned by the state through default of state bonds that the counties are administering. There's been some ongoing discussion with regard to the Department of Natural Resources and the counties with regard to back payments that the counties think the DNR owes, and the DNR is not opposed to this language, but their resources would not allow for them to take the money out of their current funding. So we are making a small appropriation here for a number of years to get those back payments squared up. And if you look on line 115, this would be then the final payment. It's not a full payment to the counties, but it is the final payments that we're expecting to be made to those counties on this issue. I would really like to put this behind me because this has been an ongoing discussion. And so that is now also, after the A2 amendment was adopted, in the Senate file 1057. And that's the bill.
Senator Scott, are you aware of any testifiers, anyone who wishes to comment on 1057? Members, questions for Senator Scoy on 1057? Seeing none, Senator Scoy, is the motion to lay the bill
over?
I would
just lay Senate file 1057 over as amended.
All right.
Or you will.
So we actually adopted the A2. We did adopt the A2. Yep. Members, we did vote on. So 1057 with the A2 amendment as adopted will be laid over for possible inclusion. Senator Scoy, let's move on then to 921.
Senate File 921, Mr. Chairman and members. This is a continuation of the conversation we had earlier with regard to the county program aid. We have a number of acres of agricultural land in the western, southern, and rural part of the state that has seen significant increase in values, as you heard from the testimony with regard to the county program aid and how is there an amendment for this too?
We have the A4 amendment, Senator Scott. Do you want to tackle that right away?
Oh, yes. The A4 amendment is an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape that I'm planning on having a conversation about. So I would move the A4 amendment.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The A4 amendment is adopted. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And if you recall the conversation about these ever-rising increases, or not ever-rising, but the rise-up in ag values that has occurred, what I want to bring to the committee's attention and as a discussion point is, we had conversation about, well, why don't the counties just levy on that increase in value? And the point I want to make is that when commodity prices were at their record highs, some of these taxes probably were sustainable. But as the commodity prices has dropped off so significantly, when you take an average soybean yield in Minnesota of 44 bushels and multiply it by $9, you generate somewhere in the neighborhood of $400 an acre in revenue. We have property taxes in this state and some of these agriculture areas that are approaching $100 an acre. It's not sustainable to expect those type of property taxes on the type of revenue that's being generated. So when I started drafting this, I thought we were going to be able to attack the property tax increase and have a cap on how much any property tax would go up on ag land. Because of the mechanisms that were in place, that isn't an option, but we can do a cap on the value increase that would be assessed in any given year for taxation. We're proposing a 10% cap that is consistent with what we currently have as a targeting program, not consistent, but it is consistent with Senator Russ's initiative that was heard in division with regard to a cap on homeowners. We have a targeting program currently in Minnesota that home taxes cannot go up any more than 12%. Senator Russ has a bill to propose to change that. We're proposing something similar for ag land. I think what it would do is it would just help take the top off of this run up in values, and as time goes on and commodity prices readjust and values readjust, this will become less important. But I think for now it's something we should contemplate as we are putting our tax bill together this year.
Thank you, Senator Scott. I've got Mr. Carlson listed as a testifier. He's coming to the table.
Oh, and Mr. Chair and members, just one other point of information. I'm looking at my notes here. There was some conversation about the property tax increases on ag land. I think the statewide average last year was 23%. I think it's 12% increase this year. I know in the northwest corner of the state, again this year, it's 23 to 24% increase in taxes on ag land. So it's been a pretty substantial run-up, and so we're trying to impact that in a short-term manner, because I think short-term it needs to be addressed without making too many long-term changes.
Thank you, Senator Skoy. Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, Keith Carlson, Minnesota Andrew County Association. I do want to thank Senator Skoy for focusing attention on this issue. We agree that agricultural property taxes are an issue that needs to be addressed by this legislature. However, I do want to inform the committee that our property tax administrators have met with Senator Skoy and raised significant concerns about the mechanics of this particular bill and the ability of our existing computer systems and software to administer this program. The primary issue is that basically we're taking a concept that currently exists within the state's special property tax or targeted property tax refund program that's administered by the Department of Revenue and trying to bring it into our property tax systems. And that doesn't work right now because the only ownership issue that we track is the current owner. We do not really track ownership in the prior years, and this is based on the same owner having owned the property in the prior year and the current year. And without us making substantial investments in our softwares, we practically can't administer this. If the requirement that it be the same owner was eliminated, it would substantially make this task more practical for us, but it's a very big concept. I know the administrators have made commitments that they would try and work on this with the senator, but right now it's a very large impediment. I'll just mention one other issue is with regards to not including the tax attributable to new improvements. Right now, when that occurs under the property tax refund program, there's a simple calculation that's made, say that one quarter of the increase in value is attributable to these new improvements, then basically the tax that's used for purposes of this is cut by one quarter. And that seems on its face to work just fine, but that doesn't really work with our systems because we have the different classifications rates depending on the value of the property. So, for example, if you had a agricultural homestead property that had a value of $1,900 this year, which is right at the break where you go from the 0.5% to the 1% classification rate, a $300,000 improvement was made on it. Under our property tax refund scheme, the value would be the portion of the tax that would be used for purposes of the refund would be cut by approximately 15%. But for purposes of our systems, the values really dropped, the net tax capacity in which the tax has been calculated has dropped nearly 25% because of that difference between the 1% and the 5%. So that would be sort of a new concept that we would have to program into our computers. So again, we do want to work with the senator on trying to bring this concept into fruition, but I want to make it clear that it's substantial challenges and would be substantial expense for reprogramming our systems.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. I know Senator Skoy has some comments, and staff has mentioned, too, that I think some of your concerns are addressed in the A4 amendment, probably not all. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the Mr. Carlson and the committee. Yes, I have met with the folks from the counties that would have to administer this. I understand there are some complications. I had hoped that by making the change to value us away from property tax that we had alleviated some of the concerns. I think we also need to start focusing in on whether we can just identify the ag land as opposed to any of the buildings or other improvements that might be involved. And so we are, it's an ongoing effort. I think that I'm hopeful that we can get there, but I will continue to meet with folks that would be required to administer this, because if it's unworkable at that level, it probably not going to be something we can move forward on. But we're trying to figure that out, and I sure appreciate Mr. Carlson bringing those concerns forward.
Any other testifiers on 921? Members, any questions or comments for Senator Skoy?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Senjum.
I just want to thank Senator Skoy for bringing this forward. Those of us that represent agriculture areas in this state know very, very well what the pressures are on farmers and sustainability with respect to their operation and their very careers in farming. It's right on the edge right now, and hopefully things will improve. But some of these policies are important along the journey to making that improvement.
And Senator Senjum, thank you for that. And it is a challenge because we're dealing with an issue that the state's relief on property taxes are not designed to accomplish, and that's the increasing in values. I mean, it seems kind of counterintuitive. I think there is a reason to look at it. As you know, there have been all kinds of proposals coming forward, and there appear to be problems with many of them.
That's what we're
We've had some extended conversations with the education community about the house garage 1 acre and the issues around that. And so we're going to continue to work on this session. And, you know, my hope is if anybody there or anybody behind me has any good ideas, that they'll darken our door and let us know what they are, because we would like to have a workable solution by the time we're done with this session.
Thank you, Senator Skoy. Any other questions? Seeing none, Senate File 921 as amended will be laid over for possible inclusion. And Senator Skoy, the last bill on our agenda is Senate File 947.
And members, we're not going to have any action on 947. This bill is another attempt to make a change at the targeting program. Senator Rest has a smaller numbered bill that is very comparable. The difference between this bill and Senator Rest's bill is that this bill had an automatic mechanism in it so that the program would automatically be applied on individual taxpayers' property tax statement. Mr. Carlson isn't going to have to come up and testify with the complications of administering this, because they've convinced me that the automatic mechanism is really not workable. So while I think it would be a very good thing to do, because the percentage of people that are utilizing the program is smaller than we would like it, and we would like people to utilize state programs if they're eligible, we're not going to be able to do it automatically. So this bill can just stay on there's no action required. I'll just withdraw it.
All right. Senator Skoy withdraws Senate File 947. Senator Skoy, that's all we have on our agenda. I think you have some announcements.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, members, I'd like to say that Mr. Hurd has been trying to set aside time for us to hear the tax incident study and the Class 4D and the North Dakota studies. We think it's important to hear those as soon as we can, so we can interact with any legislative proposals that would be coming forward. The North Dakota study is now not going to propose to be done till the end of March. It was due to the legislature by February 15th. And so we are concerned about that. If we are unable to hear that report till the end of March, we do have legislation in front of the Tax Committee dealing with border cities And we would like to have the report as soon as we can. So I'm making a case for them to try to get that to us as soon as they can, because we have legislation that's going to be impacted by that report. And the full committee on Tuesday is state bills, division Monday, Wednesday, member bills, and full committee on Thursday, again, with TIF bills and possibly others. So we'll be meeting Monday, between the division and the committee every day except Friday next week. And I believe that's it, Mr.
Chair. Thank you, Senator Scoy. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, committee is adjourned.